Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday, and it's been a lovely weekend. Hopefully you had a beautiful weather weekend.
Yes,
Ray?
Yes,
you're nodding in the affirmative.
Lovely.
That's good. Excellent. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then you can get in on our conversation as we start to delve into the topics at hand. We welcome WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
And WAMC newsman Ray Graff is here, as I mentioned.
Good morning, Joseph.
Aforementioned. And the editor of the Daily Gazette, Judy Patrick, joins us this morning. Good morning, Judy.
It is wonderful to be here. I had a great weekend. Wasn't the weather beautiful?
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Are you cold?
I'm fine.
You sure?
I always,
because we can get
my
your
defensive
schmata,
posture.
If you like.
I have my arms.
You are sitting close to Alan. That's a good point.
Well, good morning and welcome. And again, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. All right, let's get to the topics at hand. Of course, on Friday, we talked at length about Brexit. And now there is a phenomenon which is being widely referred to as regretsit
or voter remorse.
Yes. So. Let's talk about some of the fractures that are taking place as a result of the vote on Thursday in the UK. And that is that this is a political crisis that has intensified on Sunday after its decision to leave the European Union, with the opposition Labour Party splitting into warring camps. Scotland's leader suggesting that its local parliament might try to block the departure, and many Britons wondering if there was a plausible way for the nation to reconsider its drastic choice. The hostilities in the Labour Party broke out as the battle lines become clearer among the governing Conservatives, left in turmoil by the vote on the European Union and the subsequent announcement by Prime Minister David Cameron that he would resign once his party chose a successor. Enter into this, many of those who were pro-Brexit have now said that they don't believe they will be able to deliver on many of the things that they promised as a result of that decision. So we mix all of that up into a great big stew, and I present it to the board, the panel as a whole, and allow you to take a stab at it.
Okay, then if you want us to talk about this, you have to call on us individually, like in your class.
All right. Well, you've already started, so Alan.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Professor. Actually, what I was thinking is...
By the way, Ray, did you know that was a rule?
No, I didn't know. Socratic method. Go figure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, we used to say at Camp Bronx House, new rule.
Yeah.
New rule. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
So here is, you know, my thinking on this, and that is, if there is enough voter remorse, and I suspect there's a lot right now because the implications of what this all means are huge. They are going to be looking for a way to do it. One way would be the Scottish Parliament, which is going to say, okay, we're getting out unless you reconsider this decision. Whether or not there is an ability to do that is anybody's guess. The second way to go is that they can do a petition, and they can get millions of people to sign the petition that we should have a revote. In other words, 1, 2, 2.5, 2.75, and maybe they change it that way. Clearly, the intellectual elite of the country have believe this is a terrible thing, that this has happened. And even guys like the mayor, the former mayor, what's his name? Johnson,
Boris Johnson.
Johnson, yeah, is going around saying there's no reason to rush this. He may have a little bit of egg on his face because he was the guy who was generally credited with being the leader or one of the major leaders in all of this. And if he's going around saying there's no need to rush this, that's interesting, especially since the analogy I would use is a divorce. Now, none of us have been divorced in this room, right? No,
that
one,
is
two,
correct.
No, not yet.
Yeah. None of us have been divorced. There comes that point at which you read about this in the paper. Somebody serves the paper on the other one and says, okay, but if you're going to do it, get out right now. Get out right now. So you have all of the Frenchmen and all the others are saying, get out right now. So they don't want to do that.
So can I?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Ray. Can I just ask a logistical question about this? Because that has been, you know, we've heard the two-year time frame as we work all of this out. And the European Union, of course, is saying, well, there's the door. You
get
want out.
Out?
Get out. Yeah. Go. Get out. Same, get out already. Yeah. But doesn't it behoove them, if they see an opening, and I mean by them, I mean the European Union, to say, oh, okay, well, if you're going to reconsider this, then let us work on this so that we can bring you back into the fold,
but
or
they
so
haven't,
that you never leave.
Nor have they said that, have they?
Well, no, that's what I'm asking. I mean, doesn't it behoove them? I mean, since this has been such a I was going to say fork to the heart. That's not a thing, is it? No, a stake to the heart.
Sounds pretty good right about now.
That it doesn't...
Is that at breakfast?
Yeah, thank you. That you think to yourself, oh, well, maybe it would be worth for them to think this over and give them another option.
Well, the one thing we have heard, I'm sorry, Judy, I'm stepping on you, I know. But the one thing we have heard from all those leaders in the European Union is democracy has to be respected. That's the one thing they're saying over and over and over again, which runs somewhat contrary to the Joe thesis that they're going to say, let's see if we can work something else out.
Well it's not a thesis. It was just a question as to whether the if they feel that it is so detrimental to the European Union and they see an opening within the country of people who do have remorse, does it not behoove them?
Behind every question is a thesis.
There's a hand raised in the back of the room.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Now, we see a lot in the press about voters' remorse. I just wonder, have we quantified this? I know that there are some high-profile people who have tweeted, and there are some loudmouths on TV who have talked about it. However, have we any actual numbers of voters' remorse?
It may work out to be 52-48.
Well, this is what I'm saying. and there is a petition already started, I believe.
Yes,
and I think,
with a million-plus signatures.
Right, and I think a majority of those are from districts that were heavily on the stay side already.
Yes.
So I don't know what has changed all that much.
Well, we don't know. But there is a sense, at least it's being pushed by the contemporary press, that there is remorse. And they're quoting people who say, I voted for it, but, you know, I just was trying to punish them a little bit.
Right, and there's a handful of people. And is the press trying to create, frame the argument, as they have been known to do on occasion?
Well, I think, by the way, interesting hand gesture, but I do think that...
How are ya? One of these.
I do think that one of the... In the story that I just read as the setup to this, when you look at those who the leaders of the parties who were pushing this and were at the forefront, they seem to even be leading the concern and bringing up questions as to how this works, as Alan mentioned.
You know, the press might have a role in this, because my search over the weekend was to try to find stories that talked about the benefits of this vote. What are the good things that are going to happen to Great Britain now that they've decided? But it's all, you know, tales of horror, desperation, loss of jobs, the economic collapse. So where are those columns, those stories that talk about the advantages?
Well, NPR actually did... No, I'm sorry. It was the BBC, because I get up so early then. I was listening to the BBC this morning. They actually did do a sort of thing. Here's what could happen that would be good, that you could make trade agreements much more simply than if they had to go through the EU, you know, moribund, you know, process. And they did do some listing, but I thought that if you listen real carefully, you're right. It sort of sounded like, you know, we're trying our best, but it's not easy.
You got to give those Scots credit, don't you? You know, they're they're a feisty bunch up there. And,
they are.
You know, Donald Trump was in the country on Friday and tweeted something about how great the vote was. And then the tweets that came that followed him were fawn, outrageous, and it's something to worth checking out online, all that.
They were masterful. Of course, what he was saying is that the Scottish people made the choice to change their country, which in fact they didn't, by a large majority, I believe 70-30. They actually were with the stay column. And so as a result of that, that caused a torrent of tweets back to the presumptive Republican candidate that were Yes, they were quite feisty and filthy, but also very, very...
Was Sean Connery tweeting?
Yes, they were delightful to read.
Well, I often had questions about those kilts. My question is this. I just want to read a note from John, who says, "Good morning, panel. The good, open borders and rights to travel, live and work. That's the good. The bad, not fair to countries like Greece, must be indexed to Germany's economy. An economy is an expression of a country's culture, and the one-size-fits-all euro does not fit the many cultures on the European continent." I just thought that reading that note would be, you know, help bring some clarity to all of this. That's it on that, yeah.
Everyone clarified? Excellent. So the promises, and this is the looking at some of these issues of what was promised, and let me just bring this up here.
While you're doing that, let me just read you Michael's comment. He says, "Can buyer's remorse be used in an American presidential election?"
I think it's been done many times.
Well, no.
In other words, to redo?
A do-over.
Well, we're not there yet, right?
No.
Not yet, but I think he's positing that we may be there.
In the days after Britain's decision to withdraw from the European Union, there has been much talk of voters' remorse. Some who voted in favor of a British exit have said that they merely wanted to lodge a protest vote and hadn't expected the Leave camp to actually win. Others said they had no idea that the implications of such a vote would be so dire. Although, didn't the Remain camp do a pretty good job as to describing how dire it could be if they got out?
There's an old joke about a psychiatrist, and somebody comes and says, doctor, how can you listen to this all day long? This stuff is terrible. How can you listen? And the doctor looks and says, so who listens? And I think that's the problem here. I don't know, Joe, that you're right in that I'm not so sure how many people were actually listening. They did do a good job, but I don't know if
By the way,
listened.
Let's see how dire it is. It's now...
Yeah.
The markets, all right, we tanked on Friday. We'll see what happens. But, I mean, there's more to it than that.
One of the biggest reasons for regret may end up being the promises made to Leave voters by leading Brexit proponents, which are being walked back by those very leaders. On talk shows over the weekend, three of them in particular were confronted by flabbergasted hosts over their playing down of integral elements of the Brexit campaign. Nigel, is it Farage? Does anyone know Farage? Was perhaps the loudest voice calling for Britain's exit from the European Union, though he wasn't officially part of the Leave campaign. As leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party, he represented the isolationist anti-immigration core of the Brexit movement. Speaking to the host of ITV's Good Morning Britain, he called one of the Leave campaign's biggest promises a mistake, though he distanced himself from the decision to make the promise in the first place. And then they have...
What was that promise?
Is that to give the money to healthcare?
The £350 million a week that we send to the EU, which we will no longer send to the EU, can you guarantee that that's going to Britain's National Health Service, asked the host of ITV. Farage said, no, I can't, and I would never have made that claim. It is one of the mistakes that I think the Leave campaign made. Hold on a moment. That was one of your advertisements. They then sparred over whether it was a Leave campaign advertisement or Farage in particular before moving on. The advertisement was the campaign's, not Farage's. That's why many people voted. And he said, well, they made a mistake doing that in the first place.
Hmm. Right. I think the voters should get things in writing, don't you?
Yes.
I'm going to read your paragraph. Why is Switzerland, this is from Ramon, why is Switzerland able to thrive in Europe while not being part of the EU? Is Great Britain as a nation at some disadvantage and cannot match the Swiss? Is all this political hay being made by existing entrenched power and their media lapdogs? That's Ramon.
Ramon.
I hate being called a lapdog.
Yeah, I bet.
But time will tell. I mean, I guess Great Britain is a good test case for this growing populist movement in the world.
Yeah, and I think whether Trump benefits from it or not, we are going to see some real implications in this country, because I do think we have an entrenched political class, whether it's a district attorney or whether it's, people who have regularly had their way, and then you find that people have said, I've had enough. I'm in the middle class. My family isn't getting any more money. I'm not doing any of this. So I get that. I mean, I think people are estranged. I think it's an existential crisis.
All right.
Wait, you didn't raise your hand, Joe.
No, I thought you were going to say something.
No.
No. Judy?
Well, you know, I think certainly the voters in Britain, if they were promised certain things and that does not happen because of this Brexit vote, I think that will make even the situation even worse, don't you? That, you know, they were voting anti-establishment, and now the anti-establishment they voted for is forgive my words, but screwing them.
But Judy, it's going to take a long time before all of that gets sorted out. Nobody expected them to say, okay, we have 2 years to go to figure all of this out. And, you know, but tomorrow you'll get your money for health care.
But it is one of those things where now the questions are being asked as to, well, you said that if you vote leave, immigration would go down. And then those are saying, well, no, we said we would control it. And they said, well, no, you said control it by bringing it down. And they said, well, there are differences there, and I think there is misunderstanding. So you look at it, as I mentioned at the beginning of that article, there are three major tenets of the referendum. For those that were on the leave camp that have already, they're already walking back and saying, no, we probably can't do that.
You know, it's that kind of prevarication, I think, that the voters or the electorate so hates about politics, either here or in Great Britain. And that's one of the things that they like about Donald Trump, even though they don't quite believe everything he says, at least he's plain spoken about it.
Plain spoken about a bunch of nonsense. Yeah, right.
But they don't trust anything that comes out of politicians' mouth. And, man, if this is the case in Great Britain, this is going to fortify that
But aren't
position.
We seeing, I agree with you, but aren't we seeing the same thing with Donald Trump now, who just over the weekend was saying, well, yeah, I was talking about the wall, but I didn't mean ban all Muslims. I'm just from the terrorist countries.
From the Department of Walking It Back, as you say.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that is true, but it's the way, perhaps it's the way Donald Trump talks, it's the way he frames it, or, you know, that they've come to believe that they won't believe what he says, but at least that is an assumption that they begin with.
You know, but the press issue here is so interesting, Judy. You know, we're looking at this, and we just say, what role does the press play in, for example, and the polling, which turned out to be drastically wrong in this election? And I think you're finding a new poll out this morning that shows one poll showing Hillary way out in front, the other just about, you know, what, 3 or 4 points, so that there is this wide difference between what the polls are saying. And we could talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the polls. We're going to take a break. The big CNN Washington Post poll, we'll talk about that next. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, and Ray Graff, part of the group this morning and making up the panel this morning. And we are very lucky to have your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We left before the break talking about polling, which we'll go back to in just a moment. But before we do that, let us catch up on some of the letters having to do with Brexit.
Okay, here's from Roger. While I enjoy listening to WMC, I rarely agree with Alan. This morning, however, we're in stark agreement. The voters are revolting against an established political class. Look at New York. Cuomo takes money from Hasidic LLCs from Kiris Joel into his campaign account while preaching about reform. All the time he acts on their behalf at the expense of Orange County. He thinks we're stupid. Alan's interview with Lou Grumman and his book were eye-opening. It's overdue time for radical change in all sides of political elite. Thanks, Roger from Warwick. And Roger, you can always feel free without saying the prayer before the meal to say, I agree with Alan. You don't have to say, I seldom agree with him, and then name three reasons you do. Jason says, hello, all. I think you would like to know the results of my informal poll at my local watering hole on Saturday night. 54% of all Trump supporters in that establishment think the U.S. should also withdraw from the EU. EU. They're indeed a fascinating group of people. Jason, I love that.
That's funny.
Okay, and Tim says, the British economy is far bigger than the Swiss economy. It's the second biggest economy in Europe, the fifth biggest in the world. So I'm not sure there can be a comparison. Read the previous person's wondering if Britain cannot do as well as Switzerland. In fact, it's the size of the exiting, perhaps more now floundering economy that makes this so very serious. And then Robert says, when did the plain speaking become a synonym, I'm so sorry, for lying? That's Judy, your point. About, you know, I always thought it meant using easy to understand rather than highfalutin language to convey complex concepts. Well, there are those, Judy, you can answer for yourself, but there are those who believe that's exactly what he's doing.
Right, he's speaking. I mean, we're talking Donald Trump and how he talks.
But I'm
not necessarily convinced he's. Well, he is conveying some background high thoughts.
Well,
he's appealing to some base issues from people. He's appealing to their emotions.
Despots in history have always seemed to offer simple solutions, which turn out to be so simple. Like a wall, or like, Hitler and the stuff that he was doing. What, Ray, you were looking
no.
at?
No, I mean, you know, you're...
Or Mussolini.
You're making points.
Yeah. Okay.
But whether or not Donald Trump is a despot, I mean, then that is not what we're saying.
Yeah, I hear you. Hi There said, remember the New York State lottery dollars and how it's to be used for schools and education, and we did get that in writing. Well, yes and no. It's always been a complex issue. I remember interviewing Mario himself on that issue again and again, and he would say, look, lottery rings money, we put in the general fund, and that's money we can now spend on education. We take it out of the general fund, we don't take it out of education, so blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
So getting it in writing doesn't even help.
Okay. Immigration control. This, not the quality of immigrants, rather it's the quantity of immigrants. John says, the Swiss, Norway, they formed their agreements gradually over decades in capital letters. Britain now needs to do that in a matter of months to end up with the same arrangements that Switzerland has with the EU. Reginald says, has anyone remarked on the similarities between Brexit and the Arab Spring? Now, that's fascinating, isn't it? Not an interesting concept?
Yeah, one of the things I had heard was that both things took America by surprise.
Yes.
Yeah. But also, in the Arab Spring, a good deal of what started out, for example, in Egypt, turned out not to be sustainable. And so that's one of the reasons I think this note is profound.
It's also a grassroots movement that was not voted on, in which this actually has a binding aspect to it.
Yeah, and that was a grassroots movement in which social media played a really large role.
Right.
Well, you said binding aspect. Do you want to explicate on that? I mean, I don't think it's binding. I think though, that they are all pretty sure that they have to do what the voters wanted.
Well, right, but they voted on it. Where the Arab Spring, that was not a vote; it was a groundswell of a movement.
Yeah.
So we're finding all the differences instead of the similarities.
And Lauren says, if the Scots get out and then the EU collapses, there'll be a sale on kilts. The Switzerland economy is entirely banking services. It's a funnel for the wealthy trying to redistribute money evasively. It exists outside the EU because its purpose is to exist in that manner. Boy, a lot of people are interested in that whole thing, aren't they, Joe? Jamie says, what Trump was saying is that he has two very beautiful lighthouse suites, maybe the best rooms in the world. That, and upon reconsideration, not even Scottish Muslims are acceptable. I don't know what that means, but whatever. I'm reading too fast. That's what I got, Joe.
All right, let's go to the polls and what we were talking about right before the break, in which there are two major polls out. One is from the Washington Post, ABC News, that has Hillary Clinton with a double-digit lead over Donald Trump, 51% to 39%. A Wall Street Journal, NBC News poll has Mrs. Clinton with a similar advantage, but of only 5 percentage points. Both polls, released on Sunday, showed Mr. Trump in worse shape than he had been a month ago, as voters in the latest polls expressed doubts about his preparedness and qualifications to lead the nation. Nearly 2 in 3 Americans in both polls say they think Mr. Trump is unqualified to be president. They're anxious about the idea of him in the White House. The post-ABC poll found, in contrast, 61% think Mrs. Clinton is qualified. Mr. Trump is coming off 2 particularly damaging weeks for his campaign, a period in which he personally attacked a Mexican-American judge, hearing a lawsuit against Trump University, gloated about predicting attacks like the Orlando massacre that left 49 dead, and fired his embattled campaign manager. To Alan's point earlier, the Journal NBC survey found that Mrs. Clinton's lead essentially disappears when candidates from the Green Party and the Libertarian Party are included. She essentially tied Mr. Trump with 39% to his 38%. Together, third-party candidates grabbed 16% of the support, which was not as strong in the post-ABC poll.
Now, let me just say that I think this business of the third parties is interesting, and I think it's also, as in the Brexit, there are a lot of people who are saying they're going to do it who might do it. There are those who are saying they're going to do it who haven't traditionally done it. You'll remember that previous candidates who ran on third-party tickets looked like they were going to get a lot of votes that they didn't get later on. So I'm thinking that here's my take on it. I think that the Libertarian candidate is going to do very well in this election. We saw George Will this weekend announcing that he was going to leave the Republican Party, of all things, and he was going to go to be independent. But I think that there was a hint there that he was going to be voting Libertarian, which I think a lot of these guys are going to do because they got two outstanding Republican governors who have now become the people on the Libertarian side. So I think the Libertarians are going to do very well. The Bernieites, that's another whole question.
Well, let me ask about George Will. I added this. This was in our stories for today that I put forward. And the reason is I just thought it was fascinating because so many different people have come out and said, well, we don't want Trump. Many Republicans, many Democrats, you know, people from all stripes have said, we don't want Trump, we don't want Trump, we don't want Trump. And George Will, who's been a conservative columnist and obviously a prominent Republican for 4 decades.
And a baseball fanatic.
Baseball fanatic, wonderful baseball writer, and said, this is not my party. And he is leaving, and he has denounced, he has been a longtime critic of Trump. To come out, but why has that made such a big deal while so many other prominent Republicans within the quote-unquote establishment, I don't think, have made the waves that George Will coming out and saying that he will not support this person?
I think it's simple. I think we like George Will. Many of us like him, even though we disagree with his politics. He's important to us.
Right, and far greater name recognition than any probably prominent Republican out there.
And he's been around, and again, he's been around for a very, very long time. By the way, he has decided to, why are you giggling?
because this was in November, but the quote here in this piece that you gave us to read from the New York Times, Trump says, you know, he looks smart because he wears those little glasses.
I love
that. He said at a rally.
Yeah.
If you take those glasses away from him, he's a dummy.
It's the kind of Trumpian statement which we would eschew, except that it turns a lot of people on.
You know, and Will was, and the other thing I think was important on what Will was saying was, I think he came from a position where he really cares about conservative issues, and he is concerned about the long-term impact of this candidacy on the conservative cause.
Well, he also believed that Republicans and conservatives, he said in a quote, to grit their teeth during a Hillary Clinton presidency and then work to beat her in 2020.
Where have we seen that before?
Goldwater.
Well, not only there, but even Obama. You know, Mitch McConnell saying, you know, my only job is to get rid of him.
But wasn't it the exact same situation with Buckley and the conservatives when Goldwater was trounced and he said, we're just going to have to... We stood our ground on principle, and we're just going to have to build now.
Well, I suppose that's what you say. I mean, what else would you say?
And just for the record, George Will changed his party affiliation to unaffiliated.
Right.
And where? What state?
I assume he's in the district. I believe that he is in Washington.
Because when you're unaffiliated, it's a very important thing in Massachusetts, where I live, a very good state.
It's a commonwealth.
Yeah, well, it's also a state. And the thing about it is, Raymond, just so you'll know, you get to vote in either primary.
That's ridiculous.
I know. No, it's great.
You don't do that.
I do do it.
I know you do. You're one of the troublemakers who does.
Man, I'm glad I'm sitting between these two.
Yeah. Well, you should have heard him earlier before we were on the
radio. We have a lot of fun in the newsroom about 7:30 in the morning.
He was so disrespectful.
Really? Pardon me, Miss Manners. Jeez, I didn't realize.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Amtrak, announcing Amtrak's Summer See New York packages, available between any two Amtrak stations in New York State and Montreal. Amtrak.com/deals for details. New York Pain Management, offering pain management for chronic pain and spine care in a private office setting with Drs. Charles Gordon and Quentin Fung. Be set free, nypainfree.com. Horsleap Tack Shop, Amenia, offering new and consigned riding clothes and tack with a focus on adult amateur riders, children, and traditional hunt attire. Horsleap.com. And from SPAC, celebrating their 50th anniversary with Modern Dance, featuring Twyla Tharp Dance Company June 30th and Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater July 8th and 9th. SPAC.org for tickets.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, and Ray Graff make up the panel, and very nice to have you with us this morning as well. We'll go to a couple of letters before we move on to our final topic this morning.
Stephen says, it's one thing not to support a candidate. It's another to leave the candidate's party. Beginning of the end for the GOP? Steve. And then Eric says, hi all. I agree that we're in a bad place politically, considering a third party, CAN, derail either of the two major parties. I am a proponent of runoff voting to address this issue fairly, a great but oft ignored solution. Thanks. It ain't going to happen. What you think these guys are going to? I keep saying this to people when they come up with all these wonderful ideas. I say, yeah, you're right about the idea, but the people entrenched in power aren't going to deal with it. Why would they do that? They'll just kick themselves out.
It is an enticing idea, though.
Oh, yeah.
You could do it in December, have a runoff.
There used to be a guy who ran the Citizens Union here in Albany, George Hallett, and his big thing was proportional voting, PR, so that, you know, if you were a communist and the whole totality gave 5% to a communist, you get elected. And he convinced everybody who was running for office to endorse it because he was the only one who was endorsing candidates from a good government group at the time. In fact, he even had it on the side of milk cartons.
So what was he proposing?
He was proportional representation. So that, let's say, you know, instead of single-member districts, you take the totality of the vote for the Congress, for example, and you find out that maybe 10% are outright communists, then that those people get a seat or two. In the Congress. We used to have it in this is very interesting, isn't it? We used to have it in New York City for the city council.
Ah.
And a couple of communists got elected, and that was the end of proportional representation.
There's a little bit of that in local governments around here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is there more?
Yes. Well, I don't know. You're the keeper of the letters.
Well, you get them over there, too, you know. Bob says three things. Polls are only really relevant after Labor Day when most Americans, not us, start paying attention. And the only thing that really matters is the Electoral College, where it looks like the swing states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida, will again determine the outcome. And by the way, in all three of them, I believe they are very close.
Yep.
Yes, Trump, that's what the latest polls are saying.
Right. Okay. There still is alive the question of whether Trump gets the nomination in July. If he doesn't, chaos ensues. And get your popcorn. And that's for my old friend Bobby English. Okay. And then.
Do you really think that's a possibility at this point, though?
Well, it depends on the level of desperation.
Yeah, I do.
It depends on the level of desperation. They are losing all kinds of people. And Trump, there's a story in this morning's paper somewhere that Trump is organizing because he thinks that there is a revolutionary potential in the party. And he's doing everything in his power not to let that happen at the convention. Don't you see?
Yeah, stay tuned. It'll be a great summer.
And it just seems that if he becomes, I mean, this is difficult to say because many will think that he's been a laughingstock from the beginning. But if he becomes a national punchline by everybody, and certainly he didn't help himself on Friday in Scotland any, that he becomes further vulnerable to such a
and then how,
to such an attack.
Well, clearly not everybody though, Joe. There are. I mean,
no, I'm just talking about the question was, which you agreed with, right? Was about the convention,
right?
Yeah, and all I'm saying is that can only grow at this point if he continues to be making the errors that he's making.
Now, Sarah has written us a letter, which I think is very important. Great Lawn Sign greetings. Saw a Great Lawn Sign the other day. Nobody, in capital letters, nobody 2016. Ha! Well, let me tell you something. If you take a normal Democratic voter who says, I don't like Hillary, so I'm voting for nobody, that's a vote for Trump. And if you take a normal Republican who says, I'm not going to vote for that guy, that's a vote for Hillary, for the other side. So it becomes very important. I know it's a funny sign, but I think who doesn't vote in this election is going to mean a great deal.
Would you speculate that this will be one of the highest turnouts we've seen in a long time?
It will. And you know why? Because anytime you have an election that is perceived to be a close election, you get a big turnout where there are real choices, so that there will be a lot of people turning out.
So just go with what Ray, with what we were talking about to Ray's question.
Yeah.
If we believe the latest poll, and let's say at the end of October, the polling is Hillary Clinton 55% and he's at 32%. Mm-hmm. Then will the?
Yes, because the cynics. Here's the question. The question in this election and the question in Brexit was turnout. Clearly, the pollsters got it wrong. They got it wrong because they didn't identify the people who were going to vote on the Brexit side properly or those numbers. I have a feeling that the Trumpets in this case are going to be cynical to the point where they're going to say, these newspapers and these polls are just leading us down the garden path. We're voting for him, and he's our guy.
Well, that and combined with in the Brexit sense, it was also because many of the people who were leaning toward to stay were younger, and they had the similar problems that Bernie Sanders had in getting the younger people actually out to vote.
Yeah, and one wonders, I mean, this is such an interesting question, Joe, whether or not those younger voters graduate, when they graduate to be older voters, whether their values change or not. In other words, I know plenty of people who used to play the banjo and play Pete Seeger songs who turned out to be conservatives as soon as they got good banking jobs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do think that this is going to be a very different election, and I don't know how the pollsters are going to get it right, because up to now, I don't really trust them.
Yeah, I mean, how much wishful thinking is there? I mean, I think in the Brexit polling, it seemed like all the media was, I'm sure I'm wrong, but it seemed like the preponderance of the media was in favor of staying.
Oh, absolutely.
And was there a self-fulfilling prophecy in the pollsters that, in fact, all the polls reflected that people wanted to stay?
And well, do you think you're seeing that in the anti-Trump polls here in this country?
I don't know.
Well, it is interesting, Joe, that as you just cited, these three, or that I and Judy did, these three very close duke-it-out states were very, very close, despite the fact that the total poll, look, Hillary's going to win big in New York State. We know that. But in Pennsylvania and Florida and Ohio, these guys are within, teeth margins.
You know, that's one of the reasons my industry is so issues so many cautions about covering a race from a poll perspective is the fact that it tends to degenerate into a horse race, and you're not dealing with the issues instead. The polls at this point are illustrative or helpful to the candidates themselves in terms of what they need to do to change course to continue to
gain, or to raise money.
Or to raise money. But from the citizenry or the electorate, I think take the polls for what they're worth. They shouldn't be the news of the day.
Well, it certainly is turning out that the polls aren't right a lot.
Right. And actually, at this point in the world, I mean, polling has been around for 50 years or so, and they have so many more sophisticated ways of right. reaching these potential voters. You think that they would be more accurate.
Well, how are they going to find them? This is the moral of silent majority.
Social media.
That's the problem.
Finally, I do want to mention that Hillary Clinton, I think we mentioned this earlier in an aside, but that Hillary Clinton will be campaigning with Elizabeth Warren today and in Cincinnati, in Ohio. And, of course, while Bernie Sanders has not yet gotten ready to actually campaign with Hillary Clinton.
He says he's going to vote for her.
He's going to vote for it.
Now, I just wanted to mention one other thing, and I'm sure we'll get to tomorrow, but Preet Bharara made all kinds of headlines this weekend by announcing that there was corruption not only in the legislature but the executive branch, and the reference was clearly to the mayor and the governor's administration in New York, and that has got a lot of knees shaking in Albany.
So he said that people are right about the system being rigged.
Yeah. And that he was sure they were going to get to the bottom of it. I think somebody's singing like a canary already myself.
Is this more with regard to de Blasio's situation?
No, I think both. I think he made it, I think, quite clear that it's going to be both.
It's a fairly vague statement, though, right?
Well,
right.
He has never proven to say something that didn't turn out to be so.
Is he indicating it's an active investigation?
Yes. Well, he's certainly hinting at him.
All right. We will end there, and we will move on, and we will be back with more Roundtable after this.